Two incoming rounds from two different directions hit the ground and the tree next to his cousin. The truth is, when bullets are whacking against tree trunks, the consuming passion in the breast of the average man is to get out of the way. David's reaction was automatic, and he retreated from that ground immediately. He ran, and he ran. As the low brush swatted him in the face, he kept running until one of his own men shouted,
"You're in a big hurry to get to the front. It's in the opposite direction."
Then David stopped. Sat down, still holding his weapon, he leaned upon it and cried. Then he abruptly got up and returned to his place in the woods on the line. The skirmish line, when formed, ran through a small piece of timber with the ground sloping down towards Rock Creek. The underbrush was also heavy, and the line of battle had been formed on the brow of a hill some 300 or 400 feet behind David. The fact was soon ascertained that they were being fired on front and right flank. Accidentally, they had gotten into an angle of General John B. Gordon's corps and were receiving friendly fire. The shooting stopped when both sides began to sing the battle hymn of the Republic. The men were all tired and more dead than alive, and it did not take long for them to lie down. As soon as they got down, a battery in the rear on higher ground than they were opened fire. The troops could feel the heat of the balls as they passed over. About this time, the rebels made a charge away to the left of where the men were lying. The battery in the rear turned their guns on the advancing rebel army. David turned his head away because he could not stand to watch the carnage of the cannon fire on those unfortunate men. David could see the balls plowing up the ground along the rear of the line, and he thought to himself,
"If ever Johnny's ran for cover, those fellows did."
Shortly after this, the rebels made another charge near the center of the line, but still to the left of David's position. He told his nearest comrade,
"I think it was a feint, their object being to keep us in our position until they got ready."
As soon as they fell back, one of the boys near David said,
"We will get a chance next."
When the men enlisted, they all got a copy of the Army Field Manual. It says in the book that a rod is about 5.5 yards. Running along their front was a little stream about 3 rods out. It had a thicket of large trees on the opposite side. David could not see over 7 or 8 rods in front of him. Back behind these trees was a large level piece of ground, a nice meadow. It made a good place to form troops, but he did not see any there. It was only a few minutes after the repulse of the charge on the left, and not over 10 minutes after their line was formed, the skirmishers commenced to rush back in. They were followed by 3 lines of battle. The man on the right of David brought his gun and took aim on one of his own men. David saw what he was about to do and quickly struck his gun, raising it in the air, so that though the gun discharged, the man was saved. The skirmisher was not more than 1 rod from them when this happened, and it did not take the rest of the skirmishers long to get through their line. When David could, he recorded his memories.
"I fired my gun, and as I was taking a cartridge, a man behind me was shot. He fell half his length ahead of me, his face towards me. Here was the only time in my life where I tried to look cross-eyed. I was trying to get a cartridge in the muzzle of my gun on my left and watch that fellow dying on my right. And just at this moment, the man on my left was killed. The thought occurred to me that I might be next. And there was no use being excited about it. There was no running, but good, solid fighting. We had fired 4 or 5 rounds when I heard the order to fall back.
Carrying the regiment's colors into battle was considered an honor and a privilege. It was also a very dangerous job and would likely get a man maimed or killed. Thus, it required a great deal of courage. Just at this time, David was very much interested in the rebel color bearer. The enemy was only 2 or 3 rods from him. The company's line was broken on the left, and their right was attacked in the flank. There was nothing left to do but retire or surrender. The moment was remembered in his diary.
We were ordered to fall back, but I did not obey this order with the rest of the regiment, for I was very much interested in the color bearer. He was coming through the creek in front of us. The creek was about 20 feet wide and about 3 feet deep, and he was yelling like an Indian. At the time, I was returning ramrod. I thought for the moment I will fix him as soon as I can get a cap on my gun. But while I was placing the cap, I changed my mind as the thought occurred he could do very little harm with a rebel flag, and that I had better shoot a man with a gun.
There was a low fence between them, about 4 or 5 rails high. Another Johnny Reb was a little in advance of the wild color bearer with his gun held in his arms. He was just about to reach the top rail with his left hand, which was about hip high, when David fired. The young Confederate soldier struck his hand against the side and dropped. He did not come over the fence. Up to this time, David had been down on his right knee with his left one cocked, which gave him a very good rest for his elbow during firing. After he had stopped the Reb on the other side of the fence, he arose and drew a cartridge. And while I was tearing it, he looked to the rear and saw his men had all fallen back about 2 rods, firing as they retired. This gave David a good view of those that were left dead on the first line of battle. It presented a regular swath of blue coats as far as he could see along the line. They were piled up in every shape, some on their backs, some on their faces, and others turned and twisted in every imaginable shape. There was a dead man on each side of them. David stood between those 2 lines of battle, viewing the window of human dead composed of his old comrades. It presented a picture which would never fade from his memory. It was a picture which tongue cannot tell, nor pen can describe, but he did his best later in his writings.